Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and today we're going to visit with Christy Marsden, the UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Rock County. We'll be talking about all kinds of things, cleaning up the garden this time of the year. We can talk about weeds and get rid of them and diseased plants. And, of course, we'll take your questions. And I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. If you've got a photo, post that up on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post your question there as well. And you can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Christy Marsden, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
My tomatoes, I still got lots of tomatoes. They're all green, or most of them are green yet. Are they going to ripen?
They could. And then, you know, if we get close to a frost date, you can pull them if they have any blush and then ripen them on your counter. But you should, I mean, we have a few more weeks at least till, hopefully a few more weeks till frost. So there's a chance. I'm still getting some on mine.
Yeah, my cherry tomatoes are just like a jungle out mm-hmm. there. And there's lots of cherry tomatoes and I love them. So.
Mm-hmm.
With a little mozzarella, or those little mozzarella balls. Oh,
mm-hmm.
my goodness.
And then basil and some olive oil.
Oh, I had that last night, as a matter of fact.
There you go.
It was great. Well, what about cleaning up the garden? There are some crops that are growing now, as we were talking about. I've got green peppers, or mm-hmm. pepper plants that are still doing fine. What about planting? Is it too late to plant anything? Cool season vegetables?
No, you could actually still plant if you have some quick growing, maybe leafy vegetables. So if you had some lettuce or if you wanted to grow baby kale or something that can handle a little bit more of the cold temperatures, you can do that. Now is also a great time to plant garlic and any of your spring blooming bulbs as well.
That's a very good point. What about getting ready for these cooler months now, what should you be doing in the garden?
So I feel like at this point of the year, a lot of people are ready to give up on the garden, even mm-hmm. though there are a few more weeks. If your tomatoes are just gone, they're gone. My tomatoes are like 75% gone. And so as we're trying to clean up the garden, it's a good idea to just get rid of any diseased plants. So because it's been such a wet year, there's a lot of disease in the garden. So if you have any squash crops that have any powdery mildew or tomatoes with any kind of blight, getting those out of the garden as you clean up. Because if they decompose in the garden, you're just inviting the disease back for next year. So as we begin to think about putting it away, just getting rid of that diseased material so it doesn't come back is a great way to start thinking about cleaning up.
Flower gardens, I know about 2 weeks ago, I got down on my hands and knees and weeded in there mm-hmm. because, you know, it gets away from you this mm-hmm. time of the year. What about weeding, or how should you deal with the weeds?
Well, if you have weeds, the soil should be perfectly moist to pull them out at this point.
Yeah, no kidding.
But if you have perennial weeds or any kind of woody weeds, now is also a really great time to try to control those as well. So like if you have buckthorn or something like that in more of a forested area, because at this point, the plant is kind of putting resources back into the roots. So if you use any kind of herbicide that moves throughout the plant, then that'll move to the roots and be way more effective at killing it off than in spring. So if you have some of your bigger weed problems, now is a good time to think about controlling those as well.
Well, we have callers online with questions, so let's go to David in Harvard next. David, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I have a first-year market garden, and I got hit with anthrax nose. Mm-hmm. I believe that's how you say it.
Yeah, anthrax nose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it affected all my tomatoes. I yanked all the vegetation and tomatoes out the best I could and threw them in the burn pile. I just want to know what I could do for next year. Can I plant in that area? I got poor drainage soil.
So in general, it's a really great idea to rotate crops as much as you can to prevent disease from coming back. So if you can plant your tomatoes or whatever affected crops in a different location in your area, then that'll help prevent it from coming back next year. It was also a really wet year, so it might not be as bad next year, but planting in a different place and then making sure there's a lot of airflow in your plants by having proper planting space. And if you're growing tomatoes, maybe even pruning the tomatoes, that'll help reduce the disease that could potentially get in there. And then if you have a problem year after year, potentially looking for a disease-resistant variety of tomato or squash or anything that's kind of dealing with that disease.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what can I plant that is not affected by anthracnose?
So usually I see anthracnose on squash plants. So probably none of the cucurbits or the tomatoes. Peppers and eggplants are also in the same family as tomatoes, so not them. So
now we're down to onions, radishes, lettuce. Lettuce would work.
Lettuce would be okay. It's a shorter season crop, so you'd only be able to do that in the spring, but that would work. You could put some sweet potatoes in there. Those would probably okay. Maybe some kale crop or melons? Like kale and brassicas. Melons are in the cucurbit, so they'll get it too.
Right.
Yeah. But you could probably do like a cabbage or kale or broccoli or something.
Yeah.
Those might be okay.
Those would work.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay,
good
thank
luck.
You.
Yeah. Thanks, David. Appreciate the call. Jerome in Jackson, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Jerome.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, for years, I used to collect all the leaves I could that fell off the tree and put them in the garden and rototill them into the soil. And boy, did we increase the amount of soil we have in the garden. It was really great. But for the last 3 years, the maple trees all had those black blotches on them.
Tar spot.
Mm-hmm.
Tar spots.
Yeah. Tar spot, it's called, yeah?
Yeah, that's called maple tar spot. And so if you are using those leaves for compost, then that's just leaving the inoculum or the disease parts. An inoculum's the part that'll infect new trees or new leaves in the following year. So if you want to reduce the amount of maple tar spot you see on your trees, then you probably shouldn't use them for mulch or compost.
Yeah, although if you got tar spot in your neighborhood, it's just going to be there.
It's going to be there, yep.
I've got it throughout the entire neighborhood where I live, and it's still okay for a mulch, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, as long as you don't care as much about having the spot.
It's not something that causes injury to the tree, is it?
No, it's mostly cosmetic.
Yeah.
All right, so then it would be safe to put it in the soil again.
Yeah, it's just you'll probably still see a continuance then of maple tar spot. So as long as you don't mind the spots on your leaves, then it's fine.
It's not going to affect the vegetables or anything else you'd grow in it. So.
No, huh?
Nope.
Okay, very good.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's go to Lisa in Madison next. Hi, Lisa.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a couple questions. This involves two different garden areas. I'm just curious. I hear different reports about when is the optimal time for planting bulbs. Someone has said that the soil may still be too warm. So wanted to get your opinion on that.
I think now is the perfect time, especially because you're in Madison. In general, garlic you want to get into the ground 6 to 8 weeks before the ground freezes, and then because they need a little bit of time to grow. And the same can kind of work for bulbs. It's very moist and wet, so trying to get the soil to dry it a little bit before you work in there so you can avoid some compaction would be good. But now is a perfect time to get in your spring blooming bulbs.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then the other question is, this is a different area. I'm tempted to put in some rye seed, annual rye, and accompany that with some compost. Is that a useful thing to do this time of year?
The rye seed, it's composted rye seed?
No. Just
plant rice.
Apply some compost.
For like a green manure. Yeah. So in general, if you plant anything that's going to grow and then it'll have winter kill and then the spring you work it back into the soil. So you can definitely do that now. It's hard to say what the weather's going to be like in a month and a half to see how much you're going to get out of growth. But now is a good time to do that as well.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. We have, some online things here. What do we got? Megan on email says that we just recently planted a Gala apple tree, and we noticed that it now has some brown spots on the leaves. What might this be, and should we be concerned about it?
So I would be concerned, just because, especially with new trees, you want to make sure that you're setting it off on the right path so they can grow big and strong. Without seeing a picture, having a better idea of what it's looking at, I can't give a good recommendation as to what it is. But I definitely, if you send in a picture, I know that Maya's going to be here next week, and she's our fruit expert, so she might be able to tell you exactly what it is. And then once you know what disease it is, then you can treat it, so then that way you can prevent it from coming back next year. There's nothing you can do about it now, and it's going to be fine for the rest of this year, but getting on top of that early is going to be helpful.
Yeah, so post a Facebook a photo on our Facebook page on the Larry Mueller Show next week, and we'll Hopefully we'll be able to take a look at it and answer.
Yeah, and then that way we know if it's actually something to be worried about or if it's just a spotted
or
leaf.
Or if it's like tar spot.
Yeah, right?
Although it wouldn't be tar spot on that.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry in Ellsworth, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I've got a question about lawn care, keeping my grass healthy. In Ellsworth, we have a lot of really dense clay soil, so the drainage is really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to finally get grass to grow this my third summer there with combining pea moss and manure.
Mm-hmm.
Grew really well.
Okay.
But now it's yellowing compared to a lot of the grass that was there. And I just want to know how to keep it healthy through the winter and if there's anything to help keep that grass continuing to reestablish and grow, because it used to be all weeds in the area,
mm-hmm.
and we've gotten the weed problem under control, but now it's just trying to keep that grass healthy.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of grass seed? Do you know what you planted?
It's just a regular that turf blend that I picked up at one of the home improvement stores of combined. It's got a
Kentucky bluegrass.
No, it's got grass, all sorts of different kinds. Like it's got rye and just other. It's a combination of grass.
Okay. When you get a combination, there's a lot of things that they put in, and Kentucky bluegrass does really well in most parts of Wisconsin. And so you might actually be seeing sometimes if there's a perennial ryegrass that doesn't do quite as well in our area. So it grows real fast and real quick, and it looks great, but then it dies back when winter comes. So I'm not sure if maybe there's something wrong in your mix that isn't establishing.
Okay.
When establishing lawns, it's really good to kind of get a really high quality soil. It's one of the few places where seed mix, the more money you spend, the higher quality and the better it'll be. It's one of the few places where that's true. But if it's already in and it's established well, what you can do now is follow a proper fertilization schedule. It's too late to fertilize this year, but in general, the major holidays, so Memorial Day weekend, Labor Day weekend, and then 4th of July are really good times to do that. And then making sure that when you mow, you don't take off more than a third. And that's just general health for a lawn.
Okay.
Usually I would recommend proper irrigation. We don't really have to worry about that right now. Going into winter, it's really, really wet. So probably it's hard. Usually, if it's well established, it'll do well. There's not a lot you can do now except to see what happens at the end of winter and what kind of winter we have, and then kind of reassess from there.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call. You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234. And that's a new lawn, so you wouldn't. He's got a compacted soil,
yeah.
And you'd talk about aerating maybe, but probably maybe a little early.
Yeah, and it's because of the moisture in the soil. It's a bad time to do that now, but just kind of figuring out what's going on with the soil. So then that way, if you do have, if it doesn't come back from winter, maybe working with the soil, aerating it or putting some more amendments in. So if the peat moss worked, great. That's a really good thing to help with that soil. But it's really hard to change a clay soil, especially for a big old lawn.
Yeah, it is indeed. Let's go to Deacon in Sheboygan. Thank you very much for calling. Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, appreciate the call.
Got the same question about two different items. My daughter just acquired a lovely garden by purchasing a new home. And there are adult raspberry bushes,
mm-hmm.
Very well and filled out, and the same with an asparagus patch. And she needs to know what to do with both of those prior to winter.
Okay. So raspberry bushes, now would actually be a pretty good time to prune those back. Raspberries grow, most of them grow in where the first a cane will grow. The first year, it's foliar growth, and the second year, it fruits. And so it's a good idea to cut out those old canes before they die back, and that just airs up the raspberry patch, so then that way you're less likely to get diseases and makes it more accessible. It can be a little challenging because raspberries are very prickly, and you might not be able to tell which ones have bloomed and which ones are not, but it's a good time to do that. We have a great resource in the Extension Service that about pruning raspberries and generally taking care of raspberries that'll kind of give some good ideas for that.
That's available at the Learning Store?
Yep, the Learning Store. It's called Growing Raspberries in Wisconsin.
And it's learningstore.uwex.edu.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and you can get the PDF there for that. If you happen to not make it out, they'll be fine in general. Raspberries do pretty well regardless. For the asparagus, I love asparagus off-season because mm-hmm. it's big and bushy and weird. But what you can do is towards the end of fall, when it kind of dies back, just cut off all of that dead growth, and then it'll come back next year.
I wouldn't do it before the growth dies, though.
No, yep. You want to wait till it actually browns out, because what's happening is all of the good stuff that the plant's producing is putting it in the roots, and you need really strong roots to create asparagus for the next year. So it sounds like it's a well-established patch as well. So you should be able to harvest come springtime and have a really good asparagus.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Christy Marzen, our guest today, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Rock County. I'm Larry Mueller. KP Whaley, our on-air producer for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, taking a look at the fall garden with our guest today, Christy Marzen. I'm Larry Mueller. And lots of callers online, so we go right to Pam in Kellogg. Hi, Pam. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I have a lantana and like to get one every year. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, the seeds on it have turned purple now, and how would I start those next year?
The lantana seeds?
Yes.
I'm not as familiar with them to know if they need any type of winter treatment. Sometimes flowers need to have a cold period so you can like put them in the fridge, but I'm not sure on those. So I'd have to look those up later. But for the most part, figuring out in a book or some online resource could tell you exactly how long it'll take for your seeds to sprout and then kind of germinate, and then you just plant it based on the first frost in your area. So generally when you get into the ground, you'll just count back the weeks and then you can start them indoors. Plants do really well when you have indoor starts, at least, do really well if you have a little bit of a light system so they don't get as lanky. But as long as you just time it correctly, you can put them in a little bit of potting soil with some water, some light, and then be able to put them back in the garden.
So would that be better, or do you think, have you ever tried to overwinter one?
I have not tried to overwinter one, no. I'm more of a vegetable grower, and then I just feel bad for overwintered plants. A lot of the times they just look so sad. Like, you know, you bring in the rosemary and you're really excited about it, and then a couple months later it's like, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but so many things, if you bring them in and they get lanky, you just chop them off in
yes.
the spring and they start right up. So.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks. But in the meantime, they do look terrible.
They do. They do. I always feel so bad.
Jeanette in Milwaukee. Let's go to you now. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. I rent a handicapped raised bed in a community garden plot. And I've been growing sorrel plants, which I love mm-hmm. to use during the summer. But somebody told me I should let them grow to seed, which I have. But now I don't know what to do next. Do they just feed themselves in this small plot, or should I, what's the next step?
So they will seed themselves for the most part. Next time you go out, you can look at the seed pods. And if the seed pods are dried and they haven't already split open and spread the seed, then you can collect the seed and save it and then plant them next year as well. So if you just want them to kind of reseed themselves, just leave them and they'll do that. And then when you're going to clean it up from the winter, just make sure that you take any seeds left in those pods, or you can just harvest those pods now to plant next year.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for calling. And let's turn to Mike in Madison next. Let me see if I can get Mike on here. Oh, can't get Mike on yet. We'll get him on in just a minute. What about transplanting? What's the cutoff for transplanting, by the way?
For bulbs, I feel like you've got another month probably, especially for garlic and some bulbs. Now, way up north where it gets colder quicker, you'd probably want to do it in the next couple of weeks. If you're going to be growing anything like fresh greens and transplanting and anything like that, oh, probably you're meaning for like perennial plants mm-hmm. and stuff. So we always say before the ground freezes and you want to give it a couple weeks. And it's just so hard to know because like sometimes it takes forever. I would try to do it within the next couple of weeks, because the longer you can give the plant to establish, get used to its new environment, the better it is. Once you hit close to Halloween weekend, it's a little, you're kind of playing dice there.
Now we'll go to Mike in Madison. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I'd like to ask a couple questions three, actually, real quick. But it's,
sure.
On my tomato plants, I still got a lot of tomatoes, but the plants themselves are all not growing, it seems, anymore. Why that is?
Are they diseased? There's a whole host of diseases that attack tomatoes. And about this time of year, a lot of people just kind of give up because their plants are dying.
Well, I'm not sure if they're diseased or they just expired their lifetime.
Yeah, they don't also like growing in cold weather, too. And so despite the fact that we're not quite into fall and winter, we have had some cooler nights, and so they might just have stopped growing. But if you're still getting tomatoes from them, then enjoy it until they actually die.
Right, pull the plants out and just leave the tomatoes on the counter?
Yep, yeah. If there's any kind of blush or color to your tomatoes, you can leave them on the counter, and then they'll color up over time.
And then I had a question on garlic and asparagus.
Mm-hmm.
Garlic, is it okay to buy store-bought, or are you better off going to a farmer or something? Asparagus I tried last year, and I planted it in the spring, but it didn't come through, but...
Yeah, I would get garlic from a grower or seed garlic, just because then you know it hasn't been treated with anything that will prevent it from sprouting. And then if you buy seed garlic, when you plant garlic, you want to plant the biggest cloves you can find. So a lot of farmers are going to keep them to themselves for that. And so if you find some seed garlic, you're going to get bigger cloves that you can plant and get a better crop from next year. Seed garlic is just what you would call garlic that you would plant.
But it isn't the bulbs, right?
No, they'd be the bulbs. They'd be the cloves. So if you take a bulb of garlic and break off all the cloves, you're just going to be planting one of those individual cloves. So we just call it seed garlic because it's the start of new garlic.
Yeah, but you need to get it from a garden center opposed to what in the store.
Yep.
Asparagus, is there any trick to starting that?
So making sure you have the proper depth, they need to be kind of deep, and then just letting them establish. You also have to have pretty well-draining soil so that they can establish well and not rot out.
There's a nice publication in UW Extension on growing asparagus, and I mean it involves doing a trench maybe 8 inches deep and then putting the asparagus bulbs in and then sort of filling that over the course of spring and summer.
Yep, yeah. It takes a little bit of a commitment, but making sure that you have good soil and kind of prepare that soil early. So if you're thinking of doing that in the spring, maybe amending that area with some compost this fall to get it nice and ready.
I do have compost in the backyard, but thanks for the link, the idea for the brochure, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And so there's... brochures galore at the Learning Store, and the Horticulture website, too, has a lot of
UW. So that's at Hort, so hort.uwex.edu. And so we link all of our publications on there. There's you can get links to all the labs and then ask your local educator question on there. It's a really great resource.
Yep, it sure is. Thanks, Mike. Ben in Baraboo, it's your turn. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Larry. I just wanted to ask you guys, is it too late to do a fall planting of grass and then fertilize with Milorganite at this point?
I would caution that it might be a little late. I'm just really concerned about all of the rain we're getting and that we're continuing to get. And so you might, and then if it's cold, because it's been kind of cold and moist, that there's just nothing going to be coming out and growing. You can definitely try and see what happens with it, but like you want to have a lot of time for establishment so that the roots can get in and it can handle any kind of winter. So I would caution waiting to spring, but I like cautioning and waiting to spring anyway with this kind of thing, just so that you don't waste your time and money. It's getting a little late in the growing season, and if we keep having rain and cold weather like we're having right now, then you're not going to see anything.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Pat in Green Bay. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I have a question. I don't know if anybody else has the same problem I do, but I have both flower and vegetable gardens, and this year I have more Canadian thistle and the other kind of thistle than I do of flowers and vegetables, and I'm wondering, besides Roundup, which I don't want to use, are there ways to get rid of thistles and keep them from overtaking everything else.
Yeah, Canada thistle is the worst.
It's real, real bad. We have, in Rock County, our community gardens, we have a really big problem with Canadian thistle especially. And it's just so hard to deal with because it's prickly and it comes back. So in terms of treatment, if you don't want to use chemicals, then it's going to just be having to have persistent pulling. So just getting out there, pulling them up as much and often as you can, and preventing it from going to seed. So if you can't pull them out of the ground,
cut
at least cut off the bulbs or the bulbous flowers to prevent them from seeding. But it's just pulling a lot of them out.
And does do you ever make headway with them? Even if you do that.
Yeah, it just takes a long time. It's kind of like garlic mustard where it's you got to go for the long haul for it. And what helps is if you get out early in spring, pulling them when they're young, because it's a lot easier when you can do that. One of the things to keep in mind is hoeing them is not a good idea because they can resprout from the roots. So you really have to get in and try to pull out as much of the root as possible to prevent them from growing back.
And if you keep cutting them off, I mean, they're going to eventually starve.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And I didn't know if at this time of year when things are pretty much stopping growing, if it would be a time if I wanted to do Roundup, but I really don't want to put Roundup in my garden, my vegetable garden.
You wouldn't want to use Roundup on this crop just because Roundup kills anything it touches, but it doesn't move throughout the plant. If you did want to use anything chemical, using a systemic pesticide actually would be great for controlling Canadian thistle, especially right now, because as the plant shuts down, it's going to move the pest or the chemicals into the roots and then help kill off that plant. If you are looking or wanting to figure out that route, there's another great publication by some of our weed scientists on Canadian thistle. It talks about all the different control mechanisms, their effectiveness, and then if you wanted to use chemicals, which ones would be the best for that. And then that would also be available on the Learning Store or through the horticulture webpage at hort.uwax.edu.
Awesome. Thank you both so much.
Yep. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Pat. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Andrew in Verona. Hi, Andrew.
Hello. This is my first year for my strawberry patches, and they've done really well. I just wanted to know how to prepare them for winter.
Okay. The biggest concern for strawberry plants over the winter is soil heaving. And so that's just as you have the freeze and the thaw of the soil, they can push the plants up and out of the soil, and then that's how they die. So the best thing you can do is layer on a thick layer of mulch. You can use a straw mulch, make sure it's weed-free, something to that effect that's not going to smother the plants, but it's going to help insulate the soil, and do about a 4 to 6 inch layer of that mulch, and then that'll help protect against that heave and thaw over the winter, and take that off in the spring once the ground is not frozen.
Would you wait until it's a little cooler?
Mm-hmm.
You'd want to wait till just at around frost time, wouldn't you?
Yep. Yeah, I'd wait a few more weeks until things are actually shutting down. We still got this this period where we can still sort of grow, and it's not totally done. I'd still wait a few more weeks till you do that. But getting prepared now for that, it's a great way to make sure you'll have strawberries in the spring.
Did you say you would mow or trim them at any point, or?
Not a first-year bed, would
especially not a first-year bed. And in general, like if you have leaves that have died, you can definitely clean those up and take those back. But in general, you don't really have to mow them down or anything like that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Grant in Green Bay. Hello, thank you for calling.
Hi, I was wondering if there's any special precautions I should take with my first-year blueberry bushes.
Are they planted outside in the soil?
Yes.
Okay. Did you get your soil tested at all so that you know the acidity?
So I actually built a raised cedar garden. I went to a garden shop and I got, aluminum sulfide? And, so we had the soil right, I think, to start.
Okay.
I'm just sort of wondering what I should do in the fall to take care of them.
That's awesome that you did that. Usually people have not prepared like that for their blueberries. And then I have to tell them the sad news that they're not going to have blueberries. So really, at this point, we're just hoping that your plants can do well. So if you want to mulch the soil to kind of insulate it, you can totally do that, especially if it's in a raised bed. Raised beds are going to, the soil is going to be a little bit more apt to being the elements getting affected by the elements than something in the ground. So you can do that. And if you got the right blueberry plants that can handle a cold down to where you are, then you should be fine. You definitely during the winter want to be careful and make sure that if we have a late spring frost or if it's going to get real cold, you could potentially put a row cover over them or something to protect them from extreme cold. But they should be okay. I wouldn't fertilize and I wouldn't prune them or anything.
Would you soil test after the first year? Do you think that acid soil, for acidity?
You could definitely do that to check to make sure that you're still at the same level that you want it to be, especially to see if you have to add any amendments.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Okay.
I'd do that.
Great.
Great. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
Yeah, good luck.
We have Frank in Wautoma up next. Hi, Frank.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm kind of embarrassed to ask this kind of simple question. I think it's simple, but how do you know when a watermelon is ripe? Mm-hmm. When I was a boy, we used to either cut a plug, what we called a plug in them, mm-hmm. or thump them. And the plug, I guess, was a sure thing, but you left a hole in the watermelon, but thumping mm-hmm. them never worked pretty that good.
Yeah, so you said it's a simple question. It's actually a hard question. I struggle with this in my own garden. In general, when I would harvest my melons is if they've been lying on the ground and you flip them over, wherever they've been sitting on the ground, if that spot has turned yellow or turned a color, that's generally a really good time to harvest them.
Even if it's white or not yellow yet?
Yeah, it's just that color change from it being immature to mature. And so you could... that's when I tell people to harvest them. It is kind of hard to tell. So if you harvest one and it's a little too early, then you know for the next one not to do that.
I'm in one of those situations where I've got one out there.
Oh!
I'd
really
turn it over and look at the spot and see if mm-hmm. it's yellowing at all.
Yeah, and especially at this time of the year, you really want to make sure that like the longer you leave it out there, the more appealing it looks to an animal or potentially like getting some other things. And so we kind of play that game. But if the bottom where it sits on the ground has colored, then it most likely should be good to eat.
All right. Well, thank you so much. It would take a big honking animal to get at this one.
That's good then.
That's good.
Enjoy it.
Have fun with it, Frank. Appreciate the call. I made a smoothie with some watermelon and muskmelon together, and I think I threw some blueberries in there and a lime.
That sounds really good. I feel like you could freeze that and have really a really refreshing summer treat.
Yeah, I didn't freeze. I drank it all.
Yeah, well, there you go.
There you go, Stuart in Cedarburg. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have plants on a deck outside, mm-hmm. geranium, rosemary, lavender, a couple of hibiscus, and some succulents. The question is when to move them into the sunroom, and once they're in the sunroom over the winter, how much and how frequently to water them?
All right. So you should move them in before we get close to a nighttime frost. So if just pay attention to the weather, we still have a few more weeks until the first kill frost comes. And so if the nighttime temperatures start getting down to like 50, lower 50s to the 40s, then I'd think about moving those in. Once they're in, you water them when they're dry. So just making sure you check the soil by putting your finger in it. If there's any type of moisture, don't water them. A lot of plants die indoors from being overwatered. So just preventing that from happening.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Mary in Menominee, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello. I was wondering, I use vinegar on my weeds, and then I amend the soil with lime. Is that okay to do?
So I would only amend the soil if you actually need to amend the soil. So a soil test will tell you if you need to change the pH in that way at all. And then vinegar is not actually that useful as a weed killer because it doesn't have a high enough concentration. You can get horticultural grade vinegar, which is about 20% acetic acid, and that works effectively as an herbicide. It's also dangerous to use, so it's you couldn't treat it the same way as you would household vinegar. But household vinegar just doesn't have strong enough acidity to be able to effectively kill back a lot of our weeds.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Roger in Grantsburg. Hello. Thanks for calling.
How are you doing today?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Say, I had a question. My girlfriend and I have been trying. She's been trying to plant zucchini at our place for years. I live up in Burnett County, and everybody's got zucchini all the time. You know, give it to your neighbors, give it to your friends. She can't get it to grow. It's like when it starts to the zucchini starts to form on the flower end of it, it'll just start rotting right back before there's even anything there.
Yeah, I've actually seen that happen if you don't have a lot of pollinators in the garden. So what happens is the flowers just don't get pollinated, and so they die back. So do you have other things in the garden that would bring bees and different insects in to pollinate the zucchini?
Yeah, string beans and cucumbers and tomatoes and all normal garden stuff. But she's been trying for years and years and years, and it's like, she's like at the point where, just can't grow them. They won't grow here. Something in the dirt.
Yeah.
So I just researched that, if there was something, if I was lacking something in as far as calcium or lime or...
Yeah, I mean, if you've had effective, like if your other plants grow fine, then there's no reason why the zucchini can't. Usually you get blossom end rot in tomatoes and peppers if there's not enough calcium, or like there's a watering issue. With the zucchini, are you trying the same variety each year? Have you tried different types?
Different whatever, you know, they weren't the same ones.
Yeah.
And it just never seemed to, like, pan out. You might get one or two.
Yeah.
You know, and then she's tried, like, the summer gore or the summer squash. And those do the same things. The pumpkins were doing the same things. It's like, kind of strange, you know. And I know we're in real heavy soil, real heavy clay.
Yeah. That could affect it a little bit if they're just not growing as well. Because of the soil, you could get a soil test that'll definitely tell you if you have any issues with nutrients that we can't see just looking at the plants. That's strange.
I had some good luck with growing them in straw bales.
Oh, did you?
And you might just try one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Roger, it sounds like you're an experimental. You're trying everything else.
Yeah. I farm the crop farm or whatever, hay farm. So it's like, we've tried everything. I've tried lime. When I limed the hay field, I went across and limed the garden and all. And it was like, I laid it on pretty thick because it hadn't been done for years. And it took, that was like 3 years ago. And that's worked in. And it just don't. And then the other thing was thistles. They just went, after I limed it, they went insane.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like trying to kill them off and trying to do everything without Roundup or whatever, pulling them, chopping them.
That sounds like fun.
Smothering them. I smothered them with black plastic.
Yeah, and that could sometimes work. Thistles are pretty hard, so they might come up through that. But yeah, I get a soil test to maybe you have some nutrient issues going on there. And then if it keeps happening, try to see if you have any pollinators out there. You can actually hand pollinate your crops, which sounds kind of annoying, but you take the male flowers and kind of poke them inside the female flowers, and then that, if that's the problem, that could solve it. I heard of this happening a couple years ago with a lot of different people, and it didn't happen in following years, so I don't really know the exact cause of what's going on there. Sorry.
Buy a hay field, and now if you don't have male and female as far as what you're planting, it's not going to pollinate.
Yeah.
Period. Correct.
Yeah. And so a lot of the times, squash will put out male flowers first, and then a little bit later female flowers. So a lot of the people will call or talk about the fact, we're getting flowers but no fruit, and so sometimes it just doesn't match up.
Okay. I didn't know that. Kind of like Bakers.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of Bakers. They're just kind of like taking care of business themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
So it's like, I'll try it. You know, and we've been having problems with other stuff like that. And we've had we've been just saturated with rain here, so it's been
it's a hard year.
So much water, but you could tell a difference if you watered it from the garden hose to the rain. It was just totally tons different.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'd definitely get a soil test, and then hopefully that'll help you next year.
Good luck, Roger. Thanks a lot for calling. Visiting today with Christy Marsden, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Rock County. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at your garden here on the Ideas Network with Christy Marsden, Horticulture Educator in Rock County for UW Extension. Larry Mueller here. Join in. The lines are filled. The number's 1-800-642-1234. We'll turn to Judy next in Madison. Judy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and Christy. Thanks for taking the call. My question, I'm going to be moving, and I'm wondering if it's too late to transfer plants that I want to take from my current yard to the new yard.
Can you transplant them within the next, 2 weeks?
Yes.
Then you're good to go.
Okay, and how far can I cut them down? Some of them are going to be too large the way they are.
Yeah. So there's no hard and fast rule except that you want a pretty good root ball on the plant. And so I try to dig far when I do this as far down as I can, because if you have more of a fibrous root mass, you can get around that. So you want to keep as much as you can, so then that way you don't shock the plant or injure it that much. And when you're transplanting it, at least with the root ball.
Yep. But what about the part above the ground? How far can I cut that down?
I would not, it depends on how big it is. I'd try not to cut it back more than a third so you don't stress out the plant, unless it's impossible to move it because it's just too big or plant it in the new one. But the more, because it's a very stressful event that it's going through, so the more that you give it to go off of, the better it'll be. And which is why in general, with hostas and things like that, we do it when some of the more bulb type of growth, we do it when there's nothing there because it doesn't stress them out. But in this case, so just try not to take too much off, I think will be helpful.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. And kind of pay attention to where you've got them planted now and where you plan to plant them. I mean, if you're, you know, at your new place, if there's more trees or more shade for one reason or another, you kind of have to take that into account, don't you?
Yep. Yeah. So then that way, if you have a sun-loving plant, that it can continue growing in the sun at the new place as well.
Robert in La Crosse, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. And guest, we raise a lot of watermelons in the La Crosse area. In addition to the color on the bottom of the watermelon, a much more effective marker for when it's ripe is the watermelon stem contains a great deal of feelers, little small curlicue things. The one that is closest to the stem where it fastens the watermelon, when that turns brown, that watermelon is dead ripe almost 100% of the time.
That's exactly right. I should have mentioned that myself.
It really works very, very effectively.
And that works as well for other gourd type plant, squash, and so forth.
Awesome.
Indeed. Yes.
Yep. Thank you for that reminder, Robert. Appreciate it very much. Yeah, I should have mentioned that to begin with. I forgot to mention it. I should have. I planned to, and it skipped my mind somewhere in the conversation.
Most of the melons and squash I grow are for seed, so you wait until the end of the season. So knowing when it's ripe is trickier for me.
Ted in Rice Lake. Hello.
Yes, I don't necessarily have a question, but I have a comment. I can feel for those people that have lots of green tomatoes left on their tomato plant. It's besides fried green tomatoes and relish, of course. I've taken individual tomatoes and individually wrapped them in newspaper and put them in a cardboard box. And after a week or two, you start peeking at them, and you will be surprised.
Yep.
That'll... Absolutely. That's a really good way to do it. And I've even had, I think last year, I ate my last tomato in November.
That's really impressive.
I set a few out on the counter.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. When you put them in the paper, you're just trapping the gases in. So then that way they'll ripen themselves a little bit quicker, and that'll definitely work. I've also taken to pickling any of the green tomatoes, especially when they're small, and those are pretty good. It's a good way to use up those fruits before the plants die off.
Thank you very much, Ted. Appreciate the call. I had a, and I, somewhere in a move I lost it, but I had a fruit ripening bowl, which was a large plastic bowl with a top, plastic top mm-hmm. that was kind of bulbous and had some holes in the top, I believe.
Nice.
And it worked great. And yeah. somewhere along the line, I lost it.
Well, now you're just going to have to use paper bags again.
Let's go to Julie in Eau Claire. Hi, Julie.
Hi. Two questions. I've heard that you can bring in 4 o'clocks, like the whole plant.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know about that. And then I hear conflicting information about you should never leave a garden bare in winter. But I'm thinking once leaving it bare after, say, plowing it, won't mm-hmm. that kill a lot of the bad insects? And I'll just listen.
Okay.
So when it comes to covering the garden, when we think about it being bad is more when you, like, with big swaths of land. So if you think about farmland, when all that's bare and you get rain and snow melt and things like that, you can get erosion. If you're talking about a little garden in your back patch or something that's not as big, if it's bare, you're not going to see as much in the way of erosion and some of those adverse effects from leaving it like that. The insects aren't really going to die by being exposed to the air as much because they just burrow down deeper and deeper. It's just really hard when you have a garden to effectively get in a green manure, essentially, or like a winter cover crop that could essentially keep it going and then be some kind of compost in the springtime. You don't necessarily need to mulch it or do anything like that. Like, it's fine being bare. When we are concerned about bare soils, when there's like hundreds of thousands of acres of bare soil, that's more of a concern. So that's probably where that comes in. In terms of the 4 o'clocks, I'm not as familiar with being able to do that. You could definitely try, and if you bring them in, make sure that you have the sunniest spot available in your house. Be a little conscious of any airflow issues. So if it's above a heater or next to the AC, those can affect the overall growth of the plant. And just try to water it when it's thirsty, not when when the soil is completely dry.
Excuse me, but this was to, like, overwinter it, not mm-hmm. to keep it going.
Oh, okay. So I know that, like, with geraniums, what people do is they actually remove all the soil and then they put them in the bottom of their basement, and those mm-hmm. can do that well. I'm not as familiar if you can do that with these. I can't help you.
Can't help on that one.
Yeah.
I'm Julie, thanks. There may be 4 o'clock. I don't think we got a bulletin.
No, there. I don't know.
We don't have a fact sheet or bulletin on that one, so we have to look that one mm-hmm. up. Maybe we can look that up at our news break.
Yeah.
At some point in time. John and Nina, thank you for calling. Hi, John.
Hi. About 3 or 4 years ago, I cut down a big oak tree in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, this spring, I've got the whole corner of the yard is all covered with mushrooms.
Oh.
And I'm outside right now looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
And they look like an umbrella mm-hmm. that somebody took and kind of squished down. You know, mm-hmm. so you couldn't actually open up the whole umbrella.
Yeah.
And they're real kind of a light tan color.
Mm-hmm.
And after a couple of weeks, they turn black.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, my whole yard is about 20 square feet that's just littered with mushrooms.
Wow. They're not, they don't have a brainy appearance, do they?
Grainy? No.
No, brainy as in B-R-A-I-N-Y?
No, and you'd be seeing those in spring. Probably too if they're
I don't think they're brainy looking. No.
So all of those mushrooms are coming from the roots of your oak.
That's what I figure.
Yeah, and there's not really a good way to get rid of them. I first of all wouldn't eat them, but in general the way we get rid of mushrooms is to change the environment. The problem here is that, like, it's been real moist, so we can't really change that and can't get rid of the roots. So the most effective thing to do if you're worried about, like, a dog or animal eating them is just to knock them over to try to get rid of them. But you can't, like, there's nothing to spray or nothing to do really to get rid of them.
Yeah, about 2 weeks ago I sprayed the whole environment with the Weed Be Gone.
And that's not going to do anything.
Nothing more than really made them just expand their killing.
Well, yeah, because they're not affected at all by any herbicide like that. So there's not a lot to do.
I can tell you, as I go through the neighborhood, I have seen more mushrooms.
It's a great year for mushrooms.
And some enormous ones that I've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a year. And frankly, you know, John, it's just time. You know, over time, 5 years from now, you're not going to see.
Yeah, once they've actually broken down all that material.
Yeah. In the meantime, you're going to have a lot of mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
There
mm-hmm.
you go. Thanks for calling. And Dee Dee and Baraboo, you got a quick question.
Okay. Hi, Larry.
Hi.
I have a suggestion for all of the thistle people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If you go out, you got to go to like Farm and Fleet or a livestock feed place and get what they call mixing salt. It's just plain pure salt, and they mix it. They mix it in animal feed,
mm-hmm.
and it's real cheap. 50-pound bag is probably $4, you know. So take that and take a little can or something and go out with a scissors or a dandelion digger and take off that little crown
mm-hmm.
that's starting on the thistle.
Yeah.
And then pour a little bit of that salt on top of that stem that's sticking up. And they pretty much will die.
Oh.
All right. If that's worked for you, it takes a lot of work, it sounds like. And I'd be careful that you're not hitting or getting other plants are getting that salt into the soil, but
yeah, you don't want to put the salt into the mm-mm. soil for sure. And frankly, it's not something you can recommend as a horticulture educator. Because
no. And the thing about it is lots of people have things like that works. And if it works for them, that's fabulous. But in general, the science doesn't really show that works as effectively as some other mechanisms. But if it works, keep on keeping on. And
yeah. Just make sure you don't get it all over the, the ground. Talking today with Christy Marsden. She's the UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Rock County, specializes in general horticulture and vegetable production, and certainly a lot of fun to have her here with us on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk, visiting with Christy Marsden, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Rock County. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you along as we talk kind of about the fall garden with her, and I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And we'll go right back to the phones and Sarah in Mequon. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I have a lot of peonies, and they're gorgeous. Mm-hmm. But recently, I noticed the past few weeks that I have, it's not white powder, because I searched it and I found something about white powders on the leaves of those plants. But it's not white anymore. They're brown. And I noticed I had a big plant actually in the backyard. And after a while, it was dead. And now I'm wondering, I'm going to lose all my peonies just because that they have this white powder or kind of brownish powder on them.
So peonies are super susceptible to powdery mildew. And so you probably saw some of that with that. It just looks like baby powder or something like that. And it's really hard to treat if your plants have it. The best way to do it is to prevent it from happening to your plants. And in general, it doesn't kill usually. What it does do is it might just make your plant a little bit weaker. And then something else can come in. And so I'm not quite sure that the powdery mildew killed off the one bush. What you can do is try to clean up the area as much as possible. Take any dead or leaves that fall off and get rid of them so that you don't have that disease, your new plants or your new leaves next year. And it was a really wet summer. And so I've seen a lot more of that than normal, and we can't do a lot about it. There are things you can spray preventatively, but that
too late for that.
It's a little late for that now. Yep. For this year. So I just concentrate on cleaning up as much as you can. And then pay attention next year. So if you see it early, then you can do something to fix it.
Yeah, and you want to get rid of that
mm-hmm.
plant material.
Don't compost it. Throw it away. Burn it. Just get rid of it.
There we go. Thank you for calling. Robin in Portage, your turn. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Larry and Christy. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a couple questions, if you have time. But
sure.
We'll start with this one. Can I possibly dig up chive plants, put them in a pot, and bring them in over the winter? Does that work, or and how do you do it if it does?
Yeah, because normally I've never had to bring in chives. They grow fine outside. Are you worried about, have you tried overwintering them before in your yard and not been successful?
Well, they'll grow again, but yeah. I want them through
the winter. Through the winter.
Yeah, you can do chives, can't you?
You can definitely try, yes. They might not be as prolific as ones you grow outside, but you can definitely try to do that. If you provide any kind of artificial light so they can get more than what your house provides, then they'll do a lot better as well.
What about an east-south sun?
Just the sunniest window that you have. Even that, when we get to the depths of winter, when we only have like 8 to 10 hours of sun a day, that's not enough. Which is why in the spring, I generally recommend people use an artificial light system to, if they're starting seeds. So just the sunniest place you can, you know, and it doesn't hurt to try. And if it doesn't work, then you've learned something. We've all learned something.
You know,
yeah.
Do you use just the garden soil, or would you use
potting soil for sure.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So clean as much off of the roots as you could.
Yep, and then plant them in some potting soil and then see how that works.
Okay. My second question is, I have a patch of wild black raspberries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They're not black caps. They're the small ones.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, last year they did too. They got rust on them, but I was able to cut branches out quickly.
Mm-hmm.
This year I was in a nursing home after surgery, and so for 2 months I was laid up and didn't get to it.
Mm.
Went through the whole patch. What do I do about that? I didn't cut anything out. I just left it.
So it's going to come back next year then, especially because it's kind of already ingrained in there. You could, there are some drastic things you can do, like if you cut down almost all of your patch to just prevent it from spreading in or that diseased plant parts remaining there. But it's hard. It's hard now if it's gone through your entire patch because, yeah, if you risk, if you cut it all off, that nothing's going to come back next year. People have done it and have done it successfully. But if you leave all that diseased material there, then it'll just come back for next year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, that's a hard...
I'd whack it off and see.
Yeah, that might be your best bet. And then just get rid of all that plant material out of the garden so it doesn't come back next year.
Okay, and how far do you cut it down?
A couple inches from the soil.
Okay.
Right to the bottom, almost to the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Good luck.
Thanks, Robin. And Sherry in Sparta. Hello.
Well, hello. Thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
See, I caught the tail end of a comment that you made. I was in the other room about a tip you had for somebody that called in, a tip on squashes.
Mm-hmm.
And Larry commented, oh, I was going to mention that, and I forgot. And that's all I heard. And I grow both butternut and acorn squash.
Mm-hmm.
What is this tip that you have?
Well, there are these little almost curly cues that are coming off the vine.
Mm-hmm, the tendrils.
Okay. Yeah. And if you look at the one that is closest to the fruit,
okay,
if it is dead.
Yeah, if it's died back. Or
if it's died back.
Dried up.
Okay.
Or brittle, that's ready.
Mm-hmm. Then it's ready to pick. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was it.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call. And let's go to Julie in Brookfield next. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Larry. Love your show, too.
Thank you.
I have an answer for the lady that was asking about the 4 o'clocks. I dig mine up and keep them from year to year, and it's super simple. I treat them very much like the canna bulbs. I wait for a light frost to die back most of the plant. I cut the stems off a couple inches above the root line and dig it up and keep it in a cool, dark place, again, just like cannas. In the spring, that stem will naturally fall off, and you will see a lot of new little sprouts coming up, just like the cannas. And then you plant it in the ground, and you will have flowers and a much bigger plant every year.
Awesome.
One time I kept the same bulb because it was one of those marble colors, yellow and red, and I really liked the flowers. I had the same bulb for 8 years.
Oh.
By the end of the 8th year, it was the size of a bushel basket.
Whoa.
I finally couldn't dig it anymore because I didn't have the back power to do it. So, yes, you can do
Great.
It. And it's really easy. They start out looking like a large carrot.
Yeah.
And by the time they get several years old, they get huge and gnarly.
Uh-huh.
But it works like a charm.
Well, thank you so much. I've learned something good today.
Thanks, Julie. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And boy, it sounds like she is the 4 o'clock
yeah.
champion.
Yeah. 8 years is really impressive for doing that. Cool.
Lisa and Madison, your turn. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Can Baptista be subdivided? And what does it mean when something needs to be hardened off from freezing so many hours?
So I'm not quite sure what the pista is, so I can't quite answer that.
Baptista, it's like false indigo.
Oh, Baptiza. Can it be subdivided? I actually don't know. From the way it grows, I would be a little hesitant to say that it could, because it's not, most things that are subdivided kind of grow and kind of expand from the base. Like if you think about a grass or like a mm-hmm. hosta, Baptisia kind of grows like a bush from one stem out. So I would be a little, I don't think that it could. I don't know for sure though. And then when things have to harden off, what it means that in the spring, if you start your seeds indoors, if you take them from their really nice...
I mean like fruit trees.
Fruit trees need hardening off. In what context?
Like so many chill hours for an apple tree.
Oh, okay. That just means that it needs to be cold for a certain amount of time over the winter for it to effectively produce fruit in the following year. So with some of the issues,
like a dormancy period?
Exactly, yeah. And so with some of these issues we're seeing with like climate change, where we're not getting as cold of winters, we're starting to see these problems where some of these fruit trees aren't getting cold enough for long enough periods during the winter that they're just not producing fruit as effectively in following years.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Reed in Clintonville, thank you for calling. Hi.
Oh, yes. Good afternoon. In regards to the gentleman that called about the mushrooms,
mm-hmm.
From his description, they sound like shaggy mane.
Mm-hmm.
And finding something of that, a plot of that size, would be the mushroom equivalent of finding a gold nugget or something.
Yes.
he ought to have somebody come and check those. Because I'll tell you, if I lived near that man, I'd be over there picking every one of those, taking them home, dipping them in a beer batter, and having a feast. So shaggy manes are a good possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
from
that's
his description.
Yeah, that's a good point. And again, I also liked your point about getting somebody mm-hmm. over there. And I wasn't sure. I can't remember now where he called from.
Oh, I don't remember either, but definitely having an expert come out and look at it. Mushroom identification is really tricky, actually, and so it's kind of a policy in my world that we don't make recommendations one way or another, because not only are mushrooms hard to identify, but it affects people differently. So some people can eat a mushroom and be totally fine. Other people, it might adversely affect them, and so getting somebody, if there's a local potential, like a foraging group or something like that, somebody who has a lot of expertise in foraging and looking at mushrooms before you do anything, then that's a great place to go with that.
Yeah, even something like Morrell had a friend, Carol, who just got mm-hmm. a big batch of them and ate the mm-hmm. whole batch and got sick because mm-hmm. she ate too much.
Yeah, it's
so even those that are
generally okay,
safe,
yeah, you want to be real careful.
Yeah, can be a problem. Judy in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about when you can tell Swiss chard and kale are ready to be picked. I have a purple kale
mm-hmm.
and a green kale, mm-hmm. and then I have the kind of kale that has long, thin leaves mm-hmm. on it, stalks, I should say.
Yeah.
And then Swiss chard. So how do you tell when they're ready to be picked?
So they're kind of like lettuce. And you can pick them when they're grown. When you are growing anything like lettuce or Swiss chard or kale, as long as you're not okay. taking off too much from the plant, that it can keep growing. But you know, one okay. of the reasons why I love growing Swiss chard and kale is you can constantly harvest the outside of the leaves and it'll keep growing. So as long as
okay.
your plant's more than a baby, so more than 6 inches tall, then you should be fine.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. And the kale is going to be really good in the next couple of weeks, because
oh,
the colder
yeah.
it gets, the sweeter it gets.
Oh,
I love
is that
kale.
Right?
In the
maybe maybe I'll just leave it for a little while yet.
Well, you could still eat it now and just...
I start picking a few, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'd start picking.
Yeah, kale can be a little bit better during the summer, and so now that we're getting a little cooler, it'll get sweeter and be really good.
Okay, all right. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for calling. And Marilyn in Cassville, we're on to you. Hi.
Hi. I have a perennial bed with daylilies and hybrid iris, and they haven't been divided in a long time, and some witchgrass or some kind of invasive grass is getting in there.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered if you could talk about how to divide the iris and the daylilies and if this is a good time to do it right now. And do I need to just start over with brand new soil? How do I get the bad grass out of there?
Yeah, I think that it might be a little too late. Usually we do this later in the summer so that the plant has more time to kind of establish for the daylilies and the irises.
Okay.
But when you do it, just trying to pull out as much of that grass as you can. So if it's something like quackgrass where you can follow the roots down and pull that out from that soil material, that's going to work really effectively.
Okay.
I mulch the heck out of my... I've got a big daylily bed, and I just keep it really heavily mulched all year, and I have very little...
Hmm.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, I was out there weeding, but it was really easy weeding through the mulch, you know?
Yeah, and if it's... If they haven't been divided in a long time, and if there's some, I can see some weeds. When do you generally divide your daylilies?
It's better, I'd rather do it a little earlier.
Yeah.
Than this time of the year.
Yeah.
So like in August, you mean?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if you're putting them in the same space, just trying to pull out as much of the weed as you can.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Mulching works great.
Oh, yeah.
A bed like that, they're not kind of spreading out, so you can get rid of that grass that way.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of mulching.
Let's take, by the way, open lines get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Brian and Lac de Flambeau up next. Hi, Brian.
Hi, thanks, Larry. I pot quite a bit of tomato plants in like larger 5 to 10 gallon pots with like BM20 potting soil, and I mix that with leaf compost. And I had a lot of luck this year with big plants and big tomatoes. But about halfway through the year, I ended up with blight creeping in on a lot of them.
No.
And like they fully blighted out. So I want to be able to reuse that soil, but I also realize that you're kind of not supposed to do that to avoid the blight coming back next year on the tomatoes.
Yeah.
Tomato plants. Can you use that soil for other vegetables, or will I get blight on other veggies or herbs?
I would throw it away if you could, just because if you have a small area that you're growing it in, it's gonna go from that soil to the tomato plant, or if you put a pepper in there. You can actually cook your soil if you really wanted to keep it to kill off that inoculum. That just involves, though, bringing in that dirt and using your stove. And it's an involved process. And so,
yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. So I would highly recommend just kind of getting rid of it if you can. Now, you can save the other soil from your other plants that didn't get the blight and then try to reuse that. But just with blight, because it's going to get in there. You don't want it to get your other plants.
And I'd take that pot and I'd clean that pot and I would use some, I'd use some sort of disinfectant.
Like a bleach solution of some sort. I grow a lot of my things in containers. I'm going to have to do that this year because the blight also got my tomato.
Would it be okay to use that soil in like a perennial garden or like wildflower area kind of thing? Or
yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
As long as it's not close to your tomatoes.
Yeah, you don't.
And then how do you deal with that if you're using, like, I want to build some raised beds. So say I get blight into those. Like, do I have to, like, dig out all the soil?
No. Now? See, the luxury of having a container garden is that you can throw away the soil and then you're not going to have any source of blight for next year. So that's one of the huge benefits of that. If you have a raised bed and you get blight again, then just trying to be as clean as possible by removing all of the diseased plant material. And then if you mulch the soil, that can kind of help the diseased plant material from not getting in the soil. So then that way it doesn't stay in your garden.
All right. Thanks so much. I'll let you know how it goes next year.
All right. Hearing about
Sounds
it.
Like a plan. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. And Philomena in Racine, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. I had a problem with grass invading my irises and daylilies as well. And a tip I got from my brother-in-law, since I couldn't obviously, you know, use weed killer on them, was he said put on gloves that protect your hands and apply the weed killer to your hands, to your fingertips, mm-hmm. and very selectively touch the grass that's getting into your garden so that you're only affecting that particular plant.
Yeah.
And it worked wonderfully. I was able to get rid of all this grass that kept multiplying and multiplying and multiplying, you know, spreading all over the place. So it was a little putsy to do, but it really worked. And then I haven't had any more invasions since.
And you used a kind of a rubber glove and then maybe a cloth glove over the top of it?
Well, no, I just used rubber gloves, but I kept my fingertips moist enough I would you know, kind of dip them into the top of the bottle and then just touch the grass that was getting all over the garden. And it worked wonderfully. So, you know, again, you can be very selective without hurting your other plants.
Yeah, I've also recommend people use paintbrushes if they want to selectively go through the garden. Because, you know, one of the challenges, if you're spraying, it's going to kill anything that it touches. But, yeah, you can use paintbrushes or be really selective, and that's a good way to deal with it, too.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Jenny in Wauwatosa, hello to you.
Hi. I'm calling because I bought a house about a month ago, and I loved it because it had this beautiful yard from the front yard to the backyard, the side of the yard. It's got plants everywhere. I'd say about 15 different variations. And because everything's pretty much already bloomed, I have no green thumb, and it's really hard for me to identify them. First, I guess I'm wondering, what good resources would you recommend to identify them? And also, if I can identify them, what's a good just general fall treatment I should do with them to make sure that they're good ready for the spring?
Yeah. Are they flowers or shrubs or both?
Everything. There's bushes to flowers. Like, the one plant I can identify is a peony, and that's it.
That sounds like a nice garden.
It's gorgeous.
What I would recommend for help with identification is if you can take pictures of the individual plants and then potentially work with your local extension office and the master gardeners there with identification. There are definitely books out there, but if you're not... The challenge I have with a lot of the gardening books for Wisconsin is it's when they're perfectly flowering. And so if you have a plant that doesn't look like that when it's flowering or the leaves, it's a little challenging to tell. So working with your local extension office, if you take a lot of pictures and kind of work with some of the master gardeners there, you'd probably be able to identify. And then in terms of for the fall, if anything dies back, cutting it back and removing it, and then you should be good. Like, especially if you don't know exactly what it is, it should be fine.
Yeah, I would really rely on the master gardeners through your county extension office.
Yep.
Some, you know, you might even talk somebody into going out and taking a look.
Right. Yeah, it's harder to come out, but I've had some of my master gardeners in Rock County, like one of them helped a new homeowner plan this whole garden, and they're a really great resource because they not only know the local fauna really well and what works well and what doesn't, but have a lot of experience and skills in that way. So hopefully they can help you.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks so much for calling. And that goes for anybody. The extension offices around the county extension offices is a great resource. Mm-hmm. And the Master Gardener program is just the best.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great, great program. Well, here we are out of time. Gwen, I'm sorry we can't get to you with your question from Superior, but that's the way it is. If you send me an email, and I'll see if I can get somebody to answer it for you. And Christy Marsden, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
We'll get you back.
I love coming up and answering questions.
Christy, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Rock County. And she'll be back. We'll talk with her again. And, of course, there will be another Garden Talk show next week, Friday, when we take a look at the apple and grape harvest. Thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.